Welcome one and all to episode 50. Yes, 50 of the Improv Comedy Connection podcast. This has been a great journey for me, your host, Whit Schiller. So many great guests, so many kind, interesting listeners who have engaged with the podcast one way or the other. It's all been really fantastic. And so is this conversation with Rachel Mason. Rachel has been a fixture in the Chicago improv scene for a long time, with a whole mess of interesting roles in both performance, instruction, and leadership within the community. This conversation takes place as she's in the process of preparing for a very interesting next phase of course and artistic design with the upcoming relaunch of the I.O. Theater under its new ownership. There's a lot of sneak peeking for you to do on what's ahead at I.O., so enjoy that, and a lot more on the Rachel Mason episode of the Improv Comedy Connection. You have finished your Capri Sun, so I know that you are ready for our time together. So why don't we just start with a little bit about what we just touched on.
Sure.
Tell me about what is coming up with you and with I.O. So we have sort of a sense of what's coming, because I think the website says fall of 2022 is when there's more of a formal relaunch. Is that what's happening?
So Second City was purchased and started eliminating positions that were duplicate with their people or were not in sort of lockstep with what they were doing.
Okay.
And I'm an expensive loudmouth.
That's a pretty good tagline under your Instagram handle, right?
She's too loud and she costs too much. Yuck. So I was let go from Second City, and I basically, Mick and Jen approached the buyers of the I.O. Mm-hmm. who were like, "We bought what?" And like, Mick and Jen, they love them so much. Mick and Jen helped them with the job search. And I am now director of education for the new I.O. Training Center after being head of all improvisation at the Second City.
Right. And so what is the difference between taking that role at I.O. versus Second City? Because you've described the different theaters, I've heard you, as having different focuses.
They do.
And so do you now start from a completely different place? Is it the same mindset as before? What's new? What's different?
Well, much like Second City's reckoning with racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, I.O. was suffering very badly from that. Mm-hmm. So, like, literally the entire new board of I.O., like, we're like a small Herald team. And we're going to walk our talk and, like, model good behaviors instead of, like, one dictator who runs a theater. I did use the word Herald, but Herald will be one of many forms that you learn at I.O. now. We're sort of decentralizing and decolonizing our curriculum, which is amazing when it's written by like the worst white man ever. It's an incredible art form and we love Dell, but we know we own our legacy that he is problematic.
Yeah.
So in decentering him and refocusing on the work we do, the ensemble, mm-hmm. like we're going to focus on long form now. We're going to focus on teams, putting art where there wasn't any before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of redesigned. It's so funny because I designed the curriculum way back when and it got redesigned. And now having run the Second City in between, like I'm really getting to put together the training center of like our dreams.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about the whether it's decolonizing, whether it's de-delling parts of it, what were things that you found? How do you go about doing that? Because I think that's a question that a lot of improv theaters would have about their own curriculum and how to go through that process. So what have you learned through that?
Okay, hang on. I wrote something and I read it to Mick, and Mick was like, that's good. So
okay.
So I will read what I wrote.
Okay. How recently did you write this?
3 days ago.
Okay. All right.
So I'm putting together like training packets and manuals for our teachers because they're all going to go through this training. Yep. So I wrote decentering, decolonizing. Decentering the teacher means returning to a very swollen concept of the teacher as an equal part of the ensemble, a facilitator for the construction of group mind of which they are also a part. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a very Eurocentric idea to have the teacher as expert and instead of like part of the ensemble. Yeah. And I mean, he had his problems, but Del always said the group is smarter than any single one of us. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like decentering should be baked into our work.
Yeah.
And has to be reinforced.
Yeah.
And now decolonizing, because you can decenter whiteness, you can decenter the teacher. And that's where like there's an intersection between sort of decentering whiteness and decolonization. Mm-hmm. That like, and Sharna was guilty of this for sure. Like she'd be like, what do you mean you don't know who Rod Serling is?
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing who Rod Serling is no indicator of intelligence, of worldliness, of anything. So
maybe age. I mean, it's true in some ways, right? Because there's an aspect to that.
I had a talk with a student the other day who was like, we have this old guy in our troupe. And I'm like, oh, they're the best. And they were like, no. And I said, if you expect him to know who Little Nas X is, you need to know who Benny Goodman is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if that, like it can't. That's
my like
son,
the commentary right? of the background.
Yeah, that's right. My son loves jazz. He was just listening to old school jazz this morning.
Yeah, I was listening to Rocket 69.
And I want to set the world.
Yeah.
On fire.
Can we just say that he is a distinguished gentleman? It is as advertised.
He is a distinguished gentleman. So decolonization, I wrote a good paragraph on this too.
Yeah.
Let me read that to you.
And this is going in your teacher's packet or something like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Decolonization means several very important ideas that are tangential to decentering the teacher. When you decenter the teacher, you open the room to the idea that all of us are smarter than one of us, that we all might learn from each other, that we might know and believe different things from each other, and that is what makes a powerful ensemble. We do not assume reference level, and it's no indicator of intelligence. Suggestions and setups must be wary of exclusion, and teachers must course correct. Basically, it's removing presumptive language and reframing the global majority as such. Like this Eurocentric, like, we've all read this book, you know, like, we didn't all read this book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, minority, like, is no longer minority. It is global majority. So this little slice of whiteness that we've been sort of enforcing and sort of like was Iowa's ultimate downfall of young white men with literally the same reference level.
Mm-hmm. So if Del used the line, the group is smarter than the individual, how did he become so central in
curriculum? Deification, guruification, groofication is inevitable in arts, you know, like.
Why do you say inevitable?
Like, I don't, like Picasso was a terrible man and he's, you know, like worshipped. Del Close is a terrible man and he was worshipped as the inventor of this art form. mm-hmm. which he really wasn't.
Right, right. Well, you're getting back to more of the original inventor in terms of going back to viola, right?
Well, we know there's been improvisation as long as there's been language.
Right.
Shakespeare, like, there's, oh my God, Elizabethan improvisation was a thing. Mm-hmm. There mm-hmm. were improvised beats in Commedia dell'arte. Mm-hmm. And Viola Spolin and her two female counterparts, women, mm-hmm. invented short form improvisation for social change.
Mm-hmm.
And then her sons toxified it again by making it competitive. And who could outwit who? Instead of this group crushes.
So the competitive part, are you saying that was part of the original Second City or Compass model?
I'll put it onto Paul Sills for sure. But like comedy sports and like improv Olympics, like that was an easy way to like, without explaining long form or like two teams trying to outfunny each other was saleable, monetizable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which of
both of those. Yeah. Okay. Both of those are good, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and there are market aspects.
Hell yeah. Love comedy yeah. sports.
Well, and just in terms of, there's my dog.
I love your dog.
just in terms of the marketability of a training center. So, you know, how does that layer in to
well,
what you guys
why
are doing?
When Del passed, Sharna clung to Harold. Harold is such an easy, teachable structure with heightening already built in and callbacks, patterns, connections. Like, it's a very teachable form. Mm-hmm. However, when Del was dying, he literally said Harold was dead. He said that what if you don't want to do beat two of scene one? What if you wanted to do this? And he started to invent all the other forms.
Mm-hmm.
And something I like to say is the worst thing that happens when you do a form wrong is you've mm-hmm. invented a new form. So yeah. Like this idea of like teams, like when I came to Chicago, it was like, you got to see this team.
Yeah.
And I want to bring back that like, wow, this team does this and this team does that. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you can't recreate your heyday. But I think our community is hungry for mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. Second City isn't providing it. You know, it's now this like literally owned by investment bankers who want to make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just weird. It just feels really weird.
Oh, yeah. It's all yeah. speculative and their art and money rub right up against each other. Whereas IO's new owner are land rich. They are real estate people who have real money and real contracts and a real idea of the magic that they bought. Thank you, mm-hmm. Nick and Jen.
Mm-hmm. I want to pause on something that you may have talked about this in the podcast sphere or whatever, but when you talked about this sort of last class or two with Del, it was moving away or was like Harold was out of it. And now you
didn't do Harold at all. Del had us invent a form.
And was the inventing of the form for that ensemble of the class or was it for
Del said, you know, the best teams put themselves together and the best forms are created by those teams to show off a superpower that only they have. Del, like Noah, had a great like sense of like, this group is very verbal or this group is very physical. So he sort of like talked us into our form, talking to ourselves, which was like smart people commenting on things and like interrupting each other's scenes with facts and opinions mm-hmm. because that's what we did. We were mm-hmm. nerds. So, and then the team after us, I think was Griggs' class, and Del died midway through that process. So we don't know what might have been.
Okay.
But I think we would be light years ahead of where we are now.
The teams at I.O. were hand selected, right?
Some of them were.
Okay.
Like teams like Baby Wants Candy put itself together.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Wants Candy put itself together because they all had, like, all of us had deep musical knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew what an 11th hour number was and what a fugue is, mm-hmm. you know? So we mm-hmm. could, like, make, we did that. But then there are other teams that are sort of curated and put together. Like, I would call those the mid-tier teams where we're messing with things. Teams that our luck of the draw came out of a class together, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right,
but
right.
They found a way to work together.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then what will be the team structure at the new I.O.?
Okay, hang on. This is, you're getting like hot off the presses here.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, like, legit hot off the presses. I haven't really talked about this with anyone yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. Improv level planning.
Okay.
Okay. So what I wrote is, instead of herald teams, it's going to be long form ensembles. Okay. Like, our house team system is going to be a long form ensemble showcasing forms. A return to the tiered system of teams, really casting, developing artists, playing with chemistry to create great teams who will in turn create great forms. New teams, just getting started. Long form mm-hmm. ensembles, mid-tier. Featured ensemble, top tier. So mm-hmm. like, those would be the teams that anchor Saturday nights or something.
Right, 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 mm-hmm. right. Okay. And how do you evaluate who goes to what tier?
So, like, new teams will mm-hmm. be the 5B right. classes, and yep. they'll get a run of their shows that they put up.
Yep.
The next tier, either that team can audition together or they can audition individually to get put on existing teams or to, like, stay together as a team. And by the time they make it to house team, like, they've sort of really, they're clicking on all cylinders, so it's, like, it won't be hard for us to pick those teams. It'll be a process, like our artistic directors know more about this because they designed that part. It'll be like a mixture of solo auditions to get on to existing teams and entire teams themselves auditioning for a place in the schedule.
How much agency does the team have in that, having new members, et cetera? What do you think?
In this new world, hopefully a ton. And it won't be like, there was an incredible team called Preponderate back in the day. It had Seth Meyers on it.
Okay.
And Sharna put me on that team because they didn't have any girls.
Hmm.
And they hated me and they didn't like it. And they would frequently tell me rehearsal was at a different time than it was.
Oh, jeez.
Uh-huh. So I started blowing off that team, not knowing that Seth Meyers was going to become Seth Meyers. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want shit like that to happen anymore. No mm-hmm. team will be forced. Like, if a team is looking for people, mm-hmm. then they'll have a representative at the auditions and can be mm-hmm. like, we're interested in these three people. I want to do away completely with the Herald Commission, which is basically an ad hoc artistic director farmed out to a group of people who wielded their power like a mace.
It seems to be a tough balance between trying to figure out how to judge artistic progress, for lack of a better term, and curate mm-hmm. your own taste.
In an art form where we need each other, it is sort of a sin to make us compete against each other.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, like, if Del paid attention to you, it meant you were probably good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Especially if you were a woman. And he happened to like me quite a bit because I like to say I have huge balls and that my ability eventually caught up to the size of my balls.
Mm-hmm.
like Mick picked us, and we're gonna pick great people too. Mm-hmm. You know, and yes, yeah. Like our core faculty, this team of 5-6 people who are running the IO now, each of us have different tastes, different contacts, different reference levels, and per what I said before, that's what mm-hmm. makes us great.
So let's get back to the curriculum part of it here, mm-hmm. and the focus on if it's the heart aspect that has been IO in the past.
Oh my God, you're quoting me to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Uh-huh.
and you can talk about that generally if you want to fill in that background.
I say there are three different kinds of improvisers: the heart, head, and the X factor. Heart does things, head says things, and the X factor does whatever they want. And that's micro. If we pull back to macro, Second City is the head. Improv is a tool for sketch comedy. IO is the heart. Standalone pieces of improvisation that'll never be seen again, created by ensemble. And the annoyance is the X factor, where no subject matter, no language is taboo. And it's also why I think in Chicago, like, the best improviser has trained at all three places.
So
that they can access all parts of their talents.
Right. So if you're going to keep that option, then you want to have a focus at a theater so that it's part of the full experience.
Yeah.
So you were at Second City.
Yeah.
And you taught to the head more, perhaps.
Correct.
And now you're teaching more to the heart. What happens that's different?
Well, I guess I just have to be like, I just have to spit it out. Like, political and social satire is both a weapon and a tool, and the people who are drawn to it automatically already look at the world like this. You know what I mean? And Second City is a star factory. So, like, people are looking to write the best sketches and be in the most scenes and be the standout in the show.
Right.
At IO, it is... Well, what do we say? This is something I say. At the Second City, take care of your scene partner. At IO, take care of the piece. Mm-hmm. At the annoyance, take care of yourself. So taking care of the piece, like this form, like, we're going to learn, Harold, like I said, will be one of many forms we learn. So that, like, Laurent, we can work on relationship scenes. So by the time they get to invent their own form in the higher levels, they'll have experienced so many pieces. So there won't be, like, this disconnect. Like, I've learned Harold. Now I got to make up my own piece. And now I have to audition for a Harold team again. Like, I wanted to take out that pressure spike and just set them up to be good at long form. Which, Del said this. The idea that 12 people could take a stage without knowing what's going to happen is audacious, right? Like, this camaraderie of 12 nuts who aren't afraid to go on stage without knowing what's going to happen. The audacity that they could create a piece of art together, I think, is still magical to experience and, like, awe-inspiring to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, audiences are like, they made up a musical? And it's like, it's easier than writing one.
A lot less hours.
The first time Baby Wants Candy went to Edinburgh, we were pick of the fringe, and, like, we were on the BBC, and, like, it was such a big deal. And, like, a reporter was like, come on now, you wrote 30 musicals. And I was like, what? Because that's way easier than making up 30 musicals. Yes, we wrote 30 musicals and rehearsed them and brought them to Edinburgh.
And memorized them and blocked them. And
yeah, for sure. Yeah. We just take a suggestion. It's a plant who gave us the title.
Right, right. Oh, we're doing that one.
Uh-huh. Star Wars meets Swan Lake. I will never again forget that moment. Like, well, our reference level is such that me and Stuart linked arms and started doing like the four women who like do their cross legs. Right, right, right. We started doing that, but as stormtroopers in our like clunky outfits, mm-hmm. and the audience went insane.
Yeah. I got a few things off of that. Let me ask you first. The number 12 for an ensemble. How do you choose?
Honestly, it's just a number. A dozen popped into my head. My first team had like 18 people on it.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, now that I only do a two-man with Susan, it's kind of crazy. And we do 45 minutes, just the two of us.
Yeah.
So, like 12 people sharing the stage for a half hour, like, mm-hmm. you know, it made me sort of think about responsibility and mm-hmm. like contributing your 1/12th mm-hmm. instead of your 11/12ths or 0/12ths.
Right. Yep. Well, that's the thing too, though. It seems like
8 to 10 is probably ideal.
Yeah.
But I've seen great three man teams.
Sure. Sure. Well, and a two person team.
It's a team.
It feels like there's a lot of veterans who end up kind of settling in two or three person duos or trios as a part of their regular performance.
Hmm. Really? Who? Give me some examples.
Well, you've got your duo.
Susan had been doing Messing with a Friend for 15 years.
Right. Right. You know? Right.
So it's not like she's settled on me. Or that we settled. Like, we're too old. Let's just sit here in chairs and talk. Which is what Bass Prov is.
You're saying that's a settle?
No, I mean, Bass Prov literally just sits there drinking real beer with real fishing rods.
Right. Cheaters. So there would be an example. Jimmy and Johnny do a regular thing.
Oh, sure.
Some of the, you know,
I think it's more about like cream rising and like finding somebody whose reference level is like yours. And like mm-hmm. me and Susan is like breathing when we play together.
Right.
I actually played with Jimmy Johnny for a little while because it used to be mm-hmm. Jimmy Jet and Johnny. And then it was Jimmy Rachel and Johnny for a little while. Mm-hmm. And they honestly, I love them. They're so neurotic. They're both like, was that okay? And I'm like, it's already gone. Let's have some fun. Who cares? But at the same time, part of this decentering the teacher thing is reminding teachers that like a teacher who thinks they know everything mm-hmm. is the most dangerous teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone has to keep learning. Like language is literally evolving right now. So we have to evolve this art form of words with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think older improvisers settling down and finding a partner is like they found their, it's a concept.
The soulmate kind of idea.
The shared is what I was going to say.
Okay.
Your soulmate, which is the Hebrew word for a soulmate. Uh-huh.
Well, and that's, I mean, some of that, you're kind of, well, I don't know. I don't know what everybody's goals are in improv, but I think part of the goal for me anyways is connection.
Yeah.
And connection is something that, I mean, we only have so much capacity to have close connections. And so to have those close connections on stage, to me, it would seem natural that it would be a smaller group that would be comfortable, fun, and, you know, maybe more impactful, I guess.
Yeah. And now you have me thinking about teams like The Reckoning or like Improvised Shakespeare, like mm-hmm. young, full of vigor, but crushing it.
Yeah.
Joined by style of play or reference level.
Yeah, because that's part of it too. Because then the genre, for instance, can pull that.
Yes.
Or like A Baby Wants Candy, which you brought up earlier. I mean, you've got your genre. It's a multi-varied genre, but there is that shared experience that pulls you together, and mm-hmm. that keeps that group going. Almost, mm-hmm. I mean, it is its own brand.
Mm-hmm. Like if the opening number turns out to be like golden agey, we know like kind of what could happen next.
Right.
If it's a fugue like Sondheim-y opening number, we kind of know what could happen next.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where does genre fit in, or will it fit into like an IO curriculum?
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. Like I said, teams are drawn together by subject matter, style of play, or like some sort of ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the best teams, like World News Tonight, like those nerdy news guys.
Thanks.
They are.
The distinguished gentleman has mm-hmm. given his opinion. Good.
Agreed. Okay. And we agree.
And we do.
And like, you know, Jason Chin's improvised Star Trek, like if we're talking about saleable, people love that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like at The Annoyance, they have Hitch Cocktails, mm-hmm. which is like mm-hmm. sort of musical, boozy Hitchcock, mm-hmm. you know, people love it because they yeah. kind of understand it.
Right.
It's not just like long form, like what are they doing? What is this weird pattern I don't understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a thing.
Mm-hmm.
An expectation is set before they even begin to watch.
Right. Yeah. And the audience has its handholds on that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we don't lean into that more generally.
Agreed.
In the improv world.
Agreed.
Why make it harder?
Oh, my God. Exactly. We're just going to improvise for you. What does that mean? And what, like, our form is called the fart sucker. Okay. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. An audience member is never like, that form had a ton of bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm. And oh, the moves, weren't they
right?
clever?
They're that like, edit. Oh, that was funny.
That edit.
Yeah, right. They don't do that.
Yeah.
They're like, I wish that old lady character came back again.
Well, that's another of the differences, though. The eyeballs are different mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, things are coming at us so much faster. And they're also coming at us in ways that feel more manipulative all the time. By that, I mean, I don't know. It's just whenever you make some sort of statement and you start seeing it show up in the ads in whatever feed on social media you're looking at, it creates a whole different mindset for how you approach the world. Mm-hmm. And we're a really weird time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll see as students come back. Are you teaching anything in person now other than maybe some one-offs here and there that you're doing?
The building's under construction, so we're online until the building is functional, then we're classes, then we're shows.
Okay. But it's going to be interesting to see what's different in the way classes...
I can only imagine everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, people have either been, like, in isolation mm-hmm. or have been doom scrolling. So to mm-hmm. make a safe place for like joy, mm-hmm. even in these terrible times, I imagine people have a ton of shit to say.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait. And we want to hear from all the people this time.
Right.
So we're going to hear things. We're going to hear things.
And then how much performance have you been doing in person?
I have a show tonight. Oh, I've only done two shows in person for my dear friend Susan Messing.
Okay.
At The Annoyance.
Mm-hmm.
The distinguished gentleman is waiting on a booster, so I am still closed in a bubble. It was incredible. The audience was sobbing. We were sobbing. Like, we got a standing ovation when we came out, and I know it's because everyone was just so happy to be in the room together.
it seems to me that there's, you've got that dynamic. I think audiences, depending on the audience, every audience has its own personality.
Second City has been having tons of problems with people yelling out suggestions, like an unironic Trump suggestion met with a very ironic, like, Biden response. Audience member feels violated. Audience member charges stage.
Oh.
This is something that never happened before.
Right.
And right. I mean, Second City's always had security to like throw drunks out, but like never to the point where somebody made it on stage and almost laid hands on a cast member they thought was attacking them.
Well, that's scary stuff. That's very scary.
Is frightening because like when you're like satire is the like the sting that doesn't hurt. It's the honey and you know on the with the flies. It's the sugar with the medicine. If we make it funny, the truth won't hurt so much.
Mm-hmm.
But when the truth is objective to some people, subjective.
Well, there's just there's two separate truths.
No. There's only one fact, right? There's one fact.
Right. Well, there's the streams and the division. This is part of, I think, what's the difference in terms of our audiences is to try to know how to navigate those, because you either curate an audience that is all within the same stream and then everybody feels safe together.
Yeah, but that brings us back to white casts and white audiences.
Right, or whatever the limitation is comes into that. And so that's not a good idea. But we need to figure out how to get along as people generally.
Part of our initiative at IO is not just to diversify our stages, but to diversify our audiences and student body.
Mm-hmm.
We feel it's really important.
And so what's, do you have, I guess, strategies or?
Oh, tons. Partnerships, outreaches, like all kinds of great things are happening. Mm-hmm.
And is that going to also spread out like where your performances end up being?
Oh, for sure. Like, you know, going to schools down south, going to schools up north, wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. Let's go back to curriculum stuff.
Okay.
How would you describe the approach to scene work?
Something that Del said, and Susan says, I have to stop saying that because his name is Mud and it should be Rachel Believes. But Del said, what's the point of doing long form if you can't do scene work? Like,
Right. Here's
a complicated pattern to hang your shitty scene work on.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt that, well, I guess I'll say, nobody cares how clever your premise is. They care who it's happening to.
Okay.
Right? Like, you could have the most clever premise in the world, but if we don't like the protagonist, like, sorry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So people who live in worlds and evolve through those worlds, that is meaningful. It's like that, because remember, Del started at Second City. So that idea of like holding up a magnifying glass or mirror to a relationship, the relationship scene, like there's all kinds of scenes, but Del felt that the relationship scene was the bones of a good Herald.
Okay.
Like there's the day something happened, day nothing happened, teaching scene, transaction scene, the relationship scene. Simply two people in the middle of something was supremely interesting to Del. And scene work will be, well, it'll be taught every level, but heavily in the first three.
And then is there a tilt then towards relationship scenes that you're looking to foster in the scene work that your students will do?
I mean, I basically only teach relationship scenes, and then I teach people how to layer games on top of that. If you have a game first without a relationship, that game better be very good. And that's rare. That's like UCB rare.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have like a solid foundation of relationship, you can play any fucking game you want on top of that. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm swearing. Sorry to my son. And if we're X-rated now, I apologize.
Well, we'll see what the distinguished gentleman says at the end, whether it needs to have a rating or not.
Okay. He gave us a thumbs up.
Okay. All right. We'll continue then. Mm-hmm. The game aspect of things. Do you approach game in a different way than maybe a UCB description of game would be?
In the strictest UCB sense, the game is the first funny or interesting thing that happens that bears repeating. Mm-hmm. And that is why the UCB, like Amy, Matt, and Ian, were good at that. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to go, this is what's funny, and hit it, which is why the cream rises very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's a superpower to be like, I don't care who you are, we're playing this game. Mm-hmm. To me, the game of your object work, the game of your relationship, the game of your status, the game of your own character, the game of your genre, all of those things, like they will lead to funny things.
Mm-hmm. And do you see game as just something that happens or something that will happen the time?
I prefer not to call it a game. I'm using game lazily here. I prefer to look at it as like a pattern or what would be fun to do again.
Is that universal, do you think?
It might be a Chicago thing.
I guess I mean universal in that it's not cultural specific.
Oh, no, it's not. So I was working with a group from China and I was like, your audience has never been on a spaceship, but they know what it's like to be a sister and to be sad. So if you put two sad sisters on a spaceship, like you got buy-in.
And just find those things that connect.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean, like the game of location. Like, I can't. Jeff dumped me today via space phone. Mm-hmm. Ejecting refuse. Like, those are just two fun games to play at the same time.
Right. Let me ask you about individual progress and coaching versus teaching in ensemble, because improv is a team sport. I mean, I know there are one person shows out there, but in general, it is a team sport. But there is a progression that everybody goes through. There are skill sets and experiences that everybody can benefit from. But I feel like we mostly teach to the group and people pick up individual coaching along the way, hopefully, or in note sessions afterwards. Mm. So what kind of balance do you think there ought to be between team-focused training and individual training? And let me just kind of layer one more thing as to why I'm asking the question. Because I think of, like, if we go back to Spolin, a lot of it is creating a point of focus, and then you will kind of gravitate to the learning by the experience is sort of a feel that I would have on that. Mm-hmm. But then it's the individual pulling themselves there, maybe with some side coaching along the way, but it's something you have to do in the group. What can we do to help encourage individuals to maybe see where they might have gaps in their perception of what they need to learn, work on, or even just know is an option?
Well, at a student level, it's very different. Like when you are a teacher, well, I always say there's two kinds of notes you can give. One that'll fix it and one that'll get them to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Know what I mean? So I think when you're teaching, like there's way more room for mistakes and discovery and like learning on your feet. And when you're coaching, it's like a little more like, hey, we got to pick up the pace on our edits. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we might spend 3 days working on editing in like teaching. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So let me go back to the heart, head, and X factor.
Okay.
The best teams are comprised of all three of them. It's not mm-hmm. homogenous. You can't have a whole team of hearts or a whole team of X factors.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need someone to make the weird move that triggers the smart guy to go, I know what to do, that triggers the emotional guy to heighten it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying guy in a non-gendered way.
In a Midwest mm-hmm. generic sense.
Mm-hmm. These guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think like notes after shows, like we're never going to do that show again.
Mm-hmm.
So I always found notes after shows weird, unless they were like, hey, I noticed X. Next time, let's try and do Y. Like we were very low energy out the gate instead of that scene and blah, blah, blah with the callback. Like that to me is put somebody deep in, so deep in their brain that mm-hmm. they like are losing out on the fact that you just did a show, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in a classroom, we can be way more deconstructive. This was successful because of X. This was not successful because of X. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
No, I think I think you are. I think I've asked maybe too broad of a question too, but in terms of the notes after shows, I mean, if you are able to deconstruct to get to patterns or common disconnects, that can be useful. I feel like notes after shows, people are so raw emotionally about them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just sort of the culture of improv.
Yeah, we just went on stage and laid it bare. We didn't know what was going to happen, and we made something happen.
Yeah.
And now you're going to tell me my make-believe wasn't good?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the three characteristics, though, and there can be a viewpoint that you should work on the things that you aren't or aren't good at.
That's what I think. It's already your superpower. You're already good at that. So I think the more we can work outside our comfort zone, the more comfortable we are playing with and for anyone.
Okay. And then in terms of the performance, though, if you've got a superpower to, you know, you fit in a certain category.
Like the editor, the person who is not afraid to sweep edit, that is a superpower.
And so that would be something you would feel that they should lean into that much more, or?
Well,
no.
I always say, like, let's say the superpower is sick. Let's say that our editor is out sick. Mm-hmm. One of us has to be able to fill that void.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Del said, like, it was like 45, 45, 10, heart, head, and X factor. But most students fall squarely in one of them. Yeah. And I usually say, if you can't decide which one you are, you're an X factor. because you're actively trying things on and discovering. But remember mm-hmm. I said the X factor isn't bad. We need them
mm-hmm.
to make those moves that nobody would have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So like the best teams leverage not only each other's strengths, but weaknesses as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like they know how to take care of each other. This is something Sheldon Patinkin said.
Okay.
He said, you know that saying, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link?
Right.
We don't say that. We say a chain is only as strong as its ability to compensate for its weakest link.
Okay.
And I think that's fucking rad. Mm-hmm. And that's what Harold is. Harold is like running towards the fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So if somebody's in trouble, like we don't hang them out to dry. We go get them.
Mm-hmm.
We heighten what they did.
So here's a question. If you're in the chain, do you as a chain decide
Here's the second part of the chain yes. metaphor that might help you.
Let's keep going with that. Yes.
The second part of what Sheldon said, a chain is only as strong as its ability to compensate for its weakest link. Mm-hmm. And you could be the weakest link at any point. Mm-hmm. Anyone could be the weakest link at any point, mm-hmm. depending on their lives and what's going on, bad show, whatever.
Right.
So it's not like this fucking guy, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And there's probably a ethos too of valuing each, well, you want to value each individual.
Yes.
It also probably helps to have a value for the contributions that are coming from different places than maybe is natural to you.
Mick and I were talking about this the other day. Mick doesn't like the word team because it infers hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like ask the sixth man on the bench how he feels about being on the team.
Yeah.
The word ensemble mm-hmm. is like we value each other for the particular skill set we bring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And knowing that any one of us might have to step into the circle at any given time.
Fair enough. Yeah. It does have a more inclusive feel as a word. In terms of then teaching to or trying to experience the other types is a type of attunement to help you know how to interact with other ensemble members, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way you teach to that or no? Do you just, or does it just have to happen and you sort of note the goal?
I've been taking, because I have DePaul, I teach at DePaul University. I've been taking all these amazing classes on retooling mm. teaching and teaching to a diverse audience, teaching to all ages, abilities. And something that's real popular right now is in the first class, creating a contract.
Okay.
And the contract could say things like no touching without permission ever.
Mm-hmm.
No hate speech mm-hmm. ever.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody does cross someone's line, we'll assume best intentions, but address it
mm-hmm.
as to how it could potentially be problematic. And we create this contract together as a class, so they feel accountable and good, and they hold each other to a much higher standard, allowing us to play to what Dell called the height of our intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And the height of our intelligence to me means not Sophia is the capital of Bulgaria, which
mm-hmm.
it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nicely done.
It means I know what I know and I'm unafraid to share that and will fully respect that you might know something completely different than I do. So what do you call it? Table setting at the top of a show now is at the top of a class or a rehearsal is way more important like than we ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
To create this space where people feel free to put in their differing opinions or to fail in front of each other. I think, like, I'm trying to, like, I called myself out before for dudes, but I'm trying to remove gender from anything I can
mm-hmm.
when I take suggestions,
mm-hmm.
right? I will no longer take the Civil War as a suggestion. Like, you know, like asking somebody, like, where's your favorite place to go on vacation is a microaggression. You know, tell me about your mother and father is a microaggression. And mm-hmm. this is shit we never, we legit took for granted before.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I'm working very hard on stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the, you know, you kind of look back. Because I started in early 2000s. Just look back.
Mid-90s.
Yeah. So the feeling.
Gay was the joke. Gay was the joke. And
oh,
guess
yeah,
what?
Especially back then. Yeah.
It's no longer the joke. It's yeah. just life.
The feel was almost like, well, if this is mostly true, then you can just go forward as opposed to thinking about those who something wouldn't be true or known or whatever. And if you don't include the person who would be on the outside of that, that is, it's a lesser experience for all.
Agreed.
So,
well said.
So I feel like the contract with the class, with the ensemble, is probably something we're doing pretty well. How about the contract with the audience? If we think back to like your Second City example, I feel like there is an element that we need to know how to take care of our audiences in a different way, just coming back from the pandemic. But there's probably also a way that we care for each other, our teammates, and everybody else.
This loudmouth. It's
an expensive loudmouth.
Expensive loudmouth said at a Second City meeting, the art we want to make and the art the audience wants to see are in two very different places right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want to scream and yell and tear it down, and they just want to laugh. Mm-hmm. And like, until we like get to a safe place again where we can just laugh about the world instead of scream about the world, we're going to have problems. Lo and behold, the next show is savaged for its seriousness. Second City on its ETC stage, like slurs were yelled at a BIPOC cast member, and they ended up having to create a sign that was like, we love our audience and we want you to laugh and whatever. And I forget what it said, but it was like, we will not tolerate hate speech or commentary like from the audience.
Hmm. Yeah. You wouldn't think you would have to say that, but I guess you, when you talked about your contract with your class, you did say that as one of the things as well. Hmm. Yeah, saying things you shouldn't have to maybe is something we need to think a little bit harder about with our audiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. If you go to other theaters, you'll see those signs all over the place. Like, mm-hmm. please be respectful of our cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. No, I'm just kind of thinking about that experience still, because that's still kind of flooring. And you've seen this with some stand-up comedians of late.
Uh-huh. Oh my god. Yeah. Dude got punched in the face for a joke, and everyone was like, it's not about that. And I'm like, I don't know, like, if people can just start punching comedians for jokes they don't like, we got problems.
Mm-hmm.
Without talking about that, I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a show, the Second City Improv All-Stars, and we get a Trump suggestion. And of course, I think it's ironic. So I hit Hillary real hard. And I don't get the response back from the audience that I thought I was going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, maybe I did it wrong. And I hit it again, like harder. And I got like, crickets. I got angry crickets.
Angry crickets, right? Yeah.
And I was like, oh no. That was an unironic Trump suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me about 20 minutes to win the audience back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to alienate them either. I want to equally offend everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, what's his name? Second City guy says, I can't put a running order together that pleases everyone, but I can put a running order together that displeases everyone equally.
Okay.
Like, I want to equally offend my audience.
Yeah. Like, but that assumes a certain goal for the piece or the production.
Well, this is the Improv All Stars. This is the Improv All Stars. So, like, we're smarty, satirical people, but we're playing short form. And it turns out that audience, that particular audience that I did it wrong in front of, was a corporate buyout of a financial firm.
Ah, okay.
So, like, of course they were conservative. Like, of course. Like, I was like, oh, duh. That's why they didn't like my joke.
Yeah. But you didn't know that beforehand?
Mm-mm. But on stage...
That would have been good information.
Well, but on stage, I was able to adjust and win them back. Because, like I said, I want them to have a good time, too.
What did you do to win them back?
Oh, instead of political, I went social.
Okay.
Like, it's like dealing with children. Oh my god, where are the kids? And right? Like, you go for, like we said before, not everyone's been a financial banker, but people have been parents. I literally yelled that in a room. I was like, we're gonna have to lay off a political satire for a while and go hard on social satire.
To the rest of the cast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And okay. I mean, that First Amendment, like, we should be able to. And I was like, we should be able to. But we are in perilous times.
Mm-hmm.
Where the truth is subjective. Art was already subjective. What was funny was already subjective. When the truth itself becomes subjective, we have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, everyone knows what it's like when somebody farts in the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like Mitch McConnell jokes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he isn't worthy of skewering.
But different audiences will react very differently to those. Yeah, I'm in Milwaukee, so we'll play up the Midwest self-deprecating thing. And we have, as part of our group nationally, a team in Dallas, and we tried to do that same sort of humor in Dallas and in Texas. Like, why would you make fun of Texas?
Yeah.
It's just, they just don't get it.
Better and bigger in Texas.
Right. Right. And it feels like it's almost that same kind of disconnect.
Oh, hell yeah.
And different
it's
things.
A very apt comparison.
Yes. So for us, we have, I mean, again, that's why I say it kind of depends on the goal of the piece. If the goal of the piece is to give the audience a good time, we have tried to stay away from some of those offense points or exclusion points.
That's what's crazy about Second City. Like, you're going to the place that does political and social satire.
Right.
And
right.
you're getting offended. Like, I can't, my brain can't take it.
Yeah. Well, and depending on how many people know what they're going to see.
Right.
They think it's Saturday Night Live, although Saturday Night Live has less so now, but certainly.
Oh my God, I love seeing what's her face? Gay, 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 gay. Right? Don't say gay. They're all yelling gay. I love it.
But it's, you know, it is kind of the same experience, I think, in many ways to what Second City would seem to put out there. So if somebody isn't going to appreciate the political bent of a Saturday Night Live, they're going to be just as disappointed in a Second City.
Totally.
What are you looking forward to most for when you are back on stage yourself? What are the kind of things that you're looking to do miss the most?
I miss my friend Susan. I can't wait to perform with my friend Susan.
Yeah, yeah. How long have you guys been doing performances
together?
Just together, yeah.
10 years.
10 years.
15 years.
Where have those been? I know you've been doing them, but I've forgotten like which stage have you been on, or does it vary?
We traveled. Well, we're pre-COVID. We traveled the world and headlined festivals all over the world. We were in residence at Second City for quite some time.
Okay. Okay.
And since we've come back, we've been performing at The Annoyance.
Mm-hmm.
And probably we're going to end up doing something at the new IO.
When you were going internationally, how much of it was performance only, and how much of it would be you'd go and teach?
We always did both.
You always did both. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Were there things that you taught differently? International. Okay. What did you teach differently?
Your examples have to be different. Like, you can't be like cowboys and Indians. First of all, it's problematic. And second of all, they may have no frame of reference for that.
Right.
So Susan and I always do our homework. Like, who's prime minister? What's your money called? What's going on in your politics right now? So like, we can be informed. So in class, we can be like, you know, like Trump.
Glad to be in Sofia, Bulgaria.
Exactly. Exactly. There's also a game I adopted from Dell where a suggestion is what it is, what it isn't, and what it could be. Okay. So a word like shell. Mm-hmm. Shell. There is a shell of myself, a walking on eggshells, bombshells, be they literal shelling mm-hmm. of a town or like gossip bombshell, shell gasoline, a shell game.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my students was like, that would be very dependent on your English wordplay.
Yeah.
And I was like, uh-uh, there's a word in your language that means two things. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real funny one. We were in Sweden. I can't remember, but it was like clock and dick. like whatever,
right.
Something like something inappropriate. They both
okay.
either
okay.
sounded the same, homonyms or homophones, right?
Right.
And in certain languages, like they don't have concept of those things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of had to adjust my witty wordplay to the actual language in front of me. Like, for example, I'm always talking about how, like, women are getting stepped on and women don't get a chance. And while that might be true in the States, it is not true of Nordic countries where Viking women fought alongside Viking
mm-hmm.
men.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't have that problem.
So what did you pick up from that you may have integrated into your own improv from others that you might have gotten exposure to?
How important it is to do your research, like know what you're walking into, like assuming everyone is like there to learn from you, like the person you're teaching could run five theaters.
Yeah.
So like looking people up, looking up stuff relevant to their culture, educating yourself before mm-hmm. even attempting to educate them is mm-hmm. something I picked up.
Well, great. Well, we could talk about a lot more things, but before we sign off, can you just describe again, for those who want to kind of experience your teaching or what's coming, what are the ways to access that?
I'm teaching a Monday night drop-in online for the IO. It's super cheap, and it'll be every Monday for perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And then every Friday night, me and Susan and Rich Stone and Neil Dondati do a show called High Society okay. on Twitch. So you can see me perform or take a class with me.
Okay. All right. And then fall of 2022, IO reopens construction permitting.
We got all 90 right. days, and everyone knows 90 days is construction talk for we don't fucking know.
Right. Yeah. So by 2024, be there for the grand opening.
90 days.
Yeah. All right, Rachel. Well, thank you so much for this time. And thank the distinguished gentleman for all his contributions.
Thanks, Josh. You're welcome.
All right. Hope to talk to you again real soon.
Bye. Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
So many interesting dynamics to that conversation. As I said at the beginning, there certainly was a lot to pull out from the conversation about how Rachel and Io was working on their restart. It'll be interesting to see how things play out, and I'd also be interested to hear what you think about how to move forward in a situation where there are problematic aspects tied to a theater and its approach to the art. As I listened back, it struck me that there are these echoes of Del Close that kept coming up, and I'm frankly not too sure what to do with them. I think Rachel has some of that going on too, so how much can you separate out the source of the observations or the designer of certain structures from the observations or the structures themselves? Or is that a fool's errand? I don't know, but it's a fascinating challenge that I hope works through the way it should. Rachel's deep knowledge and experience comes out effortlessly in this conversation, so I hope you find ways to take advantage of any opportunity you can to connect with her at one of her workshops or performances and the like. You'll have the episode webpage as a resource for more info and links to her and her content. Anyways, that's episode 50, and for all intents and purposes, that's it for season 4. I'm not sure what's ahead and how it will be the same or different than what we've experienced to date. I love the deep dive interview approach and know many of you feel that way too. I also enjoyed the summit that we experienced that came after the lockdown. And again, the interaction with listeners and guests has been fantastic. So as regular listeners know, I really dig connection. Putting out and creating these episodes has resulted in a lot of really meaningful connections for me. So thank you for that. Let me know what your advice would be for moving forward while also continuing to share this podcast with a friend. I've been your host, Whit Schiller, and I'm an improviser out of Milwaukee, and I'm with Fish Sticks Comedy. You can check us out at fishstickscomedy.com, and you can connect with me on social media at Whit Schiller on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also go to whitschiller.com for additional content and resources to help you in your comedy or communication journey. I'm doing this to be of help to you and others as we work together to connect more deeply with each other and our audiences through comedy. Thanks again for tuning into the Improv Comedy Connection.